mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, a new analysis shows home sellers now outnumber buyers by the largest margin in more than a decade. What does that mean for the real estate market for the rest of the year? Also this morning, this week's economic calendar features crucial data on American jobs, providing key insights into the condition of the labor market amidst a rapidly fluctuating economic and trade landscape. We'll break it down. And June is a big month at the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts, with the kickoff of a full schedule of summer events, along with the announcement of the upcoming Main Stage series. Heather Clow will tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, June 2nd, 2025. I know that the kids are just out of school, but already thinking back to school time, the dates for Ohio's sales tax holiday this year have been announced. The extended event will run August 1st through the 14th. So two solid weeks. You remember, last year they extended the sales tax holiday from just one weekend to now it is two full weeks. Governor DeWine says the timing of this year's sales tax holiday not only supports families preparing for back to school, but also provides relief on other important household needs, which is interesting the way this has been framed over the past several years, because when it was first introduced, the idea was for parents to save money on the back-to-school supplies for their kids, and that was it. As a matter of fact, they put in some strict controls to make sure that people, to the extent that they could, people were not just taking advantage of this, buying up things for their own personal use. It was supposed to be strictly for school supplies, and they had some very strict limits on that. It was only for a weekend. Now it's been extended for 2 weeks, and they're actually promoting the fact that you can buy things other than school supplies. Tax breaks will apply to virtually all tangible personal property goods priced at $500 and below. Now, that being said, you still cannot purchase things like alcohol, tobacco, marijuana products, motor vehicles. Your kid may have a new driver's license and may need a new car, but sorry, you're not going to get a tax break on that. That's just too much to give up. So the sales tax holiday, August 1st through the 14th, you can circle that on your calendar. Again, I know it's a little early to be talking back to school, but that's one of the big news stories in case you hadn't heard. Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started. This is good news on a Monday, he says, with tongue planted firmly in cheek. Burnout among workers is at a 10-year high. The World Health Organization describes burnout as a syndrome conceptualized as resulting from chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. And it includes feelings of energy depletion or exhaustion, increased mental distance from one's job, and reduced professional efficiency. According to a recent report by the employment firm Glassdoor, burnout has escalated to unprecedented highs, with the term being mentioned in employee reviews. The instance of the term burnout in employee reviews is up 32% year over year as of the first quarter of 2025. 32% increase in the number of mentions of burnout in employee reviews. This report also found the mentions of burnout have increased by 50% since the fourth quarter of 2019, so right before the pandemic hit. And that is the highest rate it has ever been since data collection began in 2016. So we've never been more burnt out at our job, and largely it's because we're not managing stress properly. Something to think about as we get another work week started on this Monday. I know it's not necessarily the cheeriest news, but that actually reminds me, over the weekend, I don't know what you did over the weekend, I got a new smartwatch over the weekend. And I'd had my old smartwatch for a number of years, and the battery was starting to, you know, not hold a charge as well as it once did. And had to charge it more frequently and, you know, things like that. And there were some features that it didn't have that more modern smartwatches have. For example, my new smartwatch that I got not only measures my heart rate, but also my blood oxygen levels and my stress level. It actually measures my stress level, my smartwatch does. And I showed that to my wife over the weekend. And she's like, "You're sure you really want to know? Are you really sure you want to know what your stress level is? I'm not sure that I would want to something that was that advanced." So, I don't know. She may have a point. But this is one of the things that is paramount in many people's minds. We want to control our stress levels, and it's very important to do so. You don't need to use a smartwatch to do this. Researchers at Tufts University have now created a dental floss that can measure your stress level. A dental floss. It's embedded with sensors that detect cortisol levels in your saliva. And the cortisol levels directly correlate to stress. I don't know all of the medical science behind it, but I know that there's a connection, and that's what it uses to measure your stress. It has electrochemical sensors, FDA approved, and all of that. It can identify cortisol levels as low as 0.048 picograms per milliliter, which, again, that sounds like very small. I'm not real savvy in measurements like that, but that seems very small. 0.048 picograms per milliliter. Yeah. The device aims, they say it's as sensitive as a lab test for cortisol. So it gives you an idea. The device aims to provide real-time stress monitoring without invasive procedures. And they say in the future they may be able to use this technology to detect other health biomarkers as well. Diabetes, maybe even some forms of cancer, who knows. But for me, I'm thinking the idea of smart dental floss, that's stressing me out. I think we have this too much, too many smart things. Dental floss, is smart dental floss, I don't know that anyone was clamoring for that. So that actually is what is stressing me out. I don't know about you, but I think we're kind of overdoing it on the smart stuff, you know. Be kind of stressful. This is kind of cool story that I saw in the Newswire. Construction company in Rhode Island uncovered not one but two time capsules from two different decades while demolishing an old baseball stadium. The city of Pawtucket shared in a social media post that the demolition of the former McCoy Stadium site uncovered an 85-year-old time capsule in the stadium's original cornerstone. That's pretty cool. And then days later, the demo crew found a second time capsule that is believed to have been buried between home plate and the pitcher's mound during a historic game played on June 23rd, 1981. I don't know what was so historic about that particular game on that particular date, but that's what they said. City officials plan to unveil the contents of both time capsules later this month to mark the 44th anniversary of the longest professional baseball game played at Old McCoy Stadium. So, I don't know what's in it, but that's kind of cool. They discovered not one, but two time capsules, and apparently they didn't know they had forgotten or didn't know that either one of them was there. So, especially one from 1981, they apparently didn't do a very good job of documenting the fact that they buried a time capsule there between home plate and the pitcher's mound if they didn't know it was there and they just kind of happened to stumble upon it. So, weird. And lastly here, among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, a fitness enthusiast from Australia. Olivia Vinson is her name. She is 34 years old, and she has set a new Guinness World Record for the most pull-ups completed in a 24-hour period by a female. Most pull-ups in 24 hours by a female. You want to know the number? 7,079 pull-ups. 7,000. Nearly doubled the previous record. nearly doubled the pew. For me, pull-ups, I get one over the record, I'm fine. But she kept going and doubled the previous record. She actually had attempted to do this some time ago and tore a bicep tendon. Bicep tendon, that is. Tore her bicep tendon. That's how hard this is. But she resumed training for 2 months before her successful second attempt. She described the 19 hour mark as the most challenging. 19 out of the 24 hours as she began to feel nauseous from fatigue. Yeah, it wouldn't take me 19 hours to get nauseous from fatigue. But, man, that is intense. And if you need any Monday motivation, I'm just happy on a Monday if I can roll out of bed and get into work on time. And here, this woman's doing 7,000 pull-ups. So if she can do that, surely you can stumble from the comfort of your bed to the shower this morning. Even if that's all you can hope for, at least you can do that. If this woman can do 7,000 pull-ups in 24 hours, the least you can do is drag your sorry butt out of bed this morning. So there you go. Monday motivation. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly to mostly sunny today with a high in the mid-70s. Partly cloudy tonight, a low around 60. The community of Morrow County came together for a vigil to honor and remember a sheriff's deputy who was shot and killed on Memorial Day while responding to a domestic dispute.
Tears, hugs, prayers, and lit candles to remember Deputy Daniel Weston Shear, taken in the line of duty. Hundreds gathered in the sheriff's office parking lot. Many who knew him personally, others mourning the loss, felt deeply across the community. A strong community that holds each other up in trying times.
ONN's Kristen McFarland reporting that the visitation for Deputy Shear will be held on Tuesday at Northmore High School in Galleon from 1 to 7, and his funeral will be held at the school at 11 a.m. on Wednesday with a private burial afterwards. The Findlay-Hancock County Public Library says this summer they're teaming up with Hancock Public Health and the City of Findlay Parks and Recreation to bring you Summer Connect, a series of 7 neighborhood events designed to bring families together through fun, learning, and local resources. The library says each event will include hands-on activities, free books, and educational take-home kits, connections to local organizations and services, and a welcoming, family-friendly atmosphere. The library says it's thrilled to work alongside fellow nonprofits, government partners, and community groups to make Summer Connect happen, because together we can build a stronger, more connected Hancock County. Get more details about Summer Connect and see the full schedule of events in the story on our website. Findlay City Schools is looking for 2 families interested in hosting an exchange student from Kawaguchi High School, Findlay's sister city in Japan. Findlay City Schools says the exchange student will become part of your family with the same privileges and responsibilities as any other family member, and students are encouraged to become involved in school and community activities, as well as taking an interest in the culture of Findlay and the United States. Get more details about becoming a host family in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
So our cover story this morning, last week, the real estate firm Redfin was out with a new analysis that finds home sellers now outnumber buyers by the largest margin in more than a decade. So what does that mean for the real estate market, not just through the summer, but for the rest of the year? Brian Witta from Coldwell Banker Flag City Realtors is with us this morning. Now, obviously, I think the number that they had in the headline, Redfin, in the piece, said the sellers outnumber buyers by like 500,000. Obviously, that's not the case here.
Right.
But, you know, that's a national number, and it's skewed, obviously, toward major metros, because that's where most of the buying and selling happens. So it makes sense. But How does that reflect what you were seeing locally? I mean, that's a pretty dramatic number.
Well, I would start by saying that 35% of all statistics are made up. You know, locally, we are still a seller's market.
Okay.
Locally, we are still a seller's market. And the data that we use, we actually contract with a third party. So I'm not pencil whipping my own statistics. Mm-hmm. I'm actually providing what a third party is analyzing in the market.
Right.
And we are still handily a seller's market in Hancock County.
It's interesting, but is this a leading indicator of something that you will see trickle down into smaller markets moving forward? I mean, these are pretty dramatic numbers, and it's been a pretty dramatic shift over the past year.
Yeah, it has. And I think part of it is we still struggle with post-COVID pricing. There are still sellers that believe they can ask a premium for properties where mm-hmm. buyers aren't as willing to pay that anymore.
So that may be shifting, because that's the other part of this analysis, is that when you see that number flip
right
to more of a buyer's market than a to a buyer's market rather than a seller's market, you're going to see prices fall.
I have a friend who refers to this market. He's in the mortgage lending industry, and he refers to it as a transitional market mm-hmm. where we think it may balance better at some point. But I will also say, because people think this, Chris, we are not on the precipice of a crash. And I say this time I talk to you.
Yeah.
We're not. But there are people out there who think that.
Yeah.
And so what we'll likely see is a better balance.
Well, I think maybe some of that perception comes from the fact that it's not so much a seller's market as it was, you know, you think back in the early days of the pandemic,
yes,
when it seemed like everybody wanted to move and,
yes,
you know, everybody was in the market.
Right.
And there weren't very many sellers out there. So it was very much a seller's market at that point. Not so much now. And just any change from that extreme might be viewed as a quote unquote crash.
Right. Every time we get comfortable and used to what we know,
right,
all of a sudden anything that changes, the sky is falling. And mm-hmm. I promise it's not. This can still be done very easily.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting you mentioned a more balanced market. That's part of the point of the Redfin piece, is that they said ultimately it's going to make for a balanced market, but maybe the pendulum swings the other way before it gets there.
Yeah. And a lot of times when we see those trends happen on the West Coast first, it does take a couple of years before it gets here. So part of the counsel we're giving to folks is we have to be reasonable on how we're pricing property, reasonable on what our expectations are on both sides, buyer and seller. Mm-hmm. We have to ask for reasonable things and expect reasonable things and try to work to that middle ground.
Yeah. And by the way, just as a side note on this, reference the Redfin piece, which was out last week. I saw a piece just today that was released saying Ohio is like number five in terms of the fastest turnover within the market. So, again, just underscoring what you were saying, still very healthy here in our neck of the woods.
That is correct. In fact, our days on market has decreased since January 1st. It continues to decrease, which tells me that we are still moving at a healthy clip.
Mm-hmm. So if the market ultimately is moving toward a more balanced situation here, does that mean we're going to see prices come down a little bit?
I think eventually it will. And our growth is more tempered this year over last year. Mm-hmm. During the pandemic, there was one year, and I'm sorry, because for all of us, the pandemic years just run together,
yeah,
but there was one year in that where the data set showed me we were at a 21% average increase in value, which
that's
is
pretty,
huge.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. That's not going to be sustainable.
No, but we haven't lost it either.
Yeah.
We haven't lost it. That's important for folks to know.
And again, when we say our price is going to come down, will they come down, or will they just not go up quite as rapidly?
Right. And I think it's more not go up as rapidly.
Okay. Which, because the question out of that becomes, if this becomes more balanced and if we see prices moderate, does that bring more people back into the market who may have found themselves priced out of it by those huge run-ups?
Because that was a
major concern,
yep,
for a while, is that who are we taking out of the market because they just can't afford those starter homes or even second homes at this point.
The two things that hold buyers out of the market are the price and the interest rates. And right. So every time we see a 1% drop in interest rates, we gain a million buyers in the country, which is a huge number.
Yeah.
So as the folks sit back and say, well, I'm going to wait till the rates drop back to 3, it's not going to happen. It isn't going to happen in the near future. And so we have to be, one, used to the rates we have, work with them, and as we buy, be prepared to refinance when it comes time. And as the rates, as the pricing drops, then expect, yes, more buyers are going to feel it's more palatable to buy.
So that actually is, in the bigger picture, some good news, even though maybe for sellers, you don't want to hear that you're not getting the kind of appreciation that maybe you got 4 or 5 years ago. But overall, for the health of the housing market, this is a good thing.
Real estate still is the safest investment that someone can make.
Yeah.
It has not gone down over the last 50 plus years.
Right. And with respect to interest rates, one of the points that Redfin made in their piece is, and I thought this was kind of interesting, the mortgage rate lock-in effect is easing, meaning that people are less concerned with the fact that they might be giving up an ultra low interest rate than maybe what they were when we first saw that, when we got that shock of interest rates going up.
It was scary when it first happened. Buyers really clenched up, and I think we are getting more used to that.
Yeah. So given all of this, what's the takeaway? What's the advice to sellers? Again, Redfin says don't wait.
I would agree with that because, number one, the values aren't going backwards. And as buyers become more comfortable with the interest rates, they are more likely to buy. So putting your house on the market is not a scary thing. It can be done in a way where you're not left homeless. We're not in the business of making people homeless.
Right.
But it can be done in that way. So don't wait. It makes perfect sense to put it on while the weather is nice, while people are out there looking. I mean, the weather this week, my goodness, people are going to be out there looking.
Yeah. So, but time may not be on your side sooner rather than later if you're thinking of listing is probably a wise move.
I would agree.
And then the takeaway for buyers, don't get discouraged.
No, take a deep breath. We are in a new normal. The interest rates sound scary. They are not. Everything is cyclical in real estate. At some point, those rates will come back down. Mm-hmm. You can refinance without cashing out and gain equity in the process. Now, you can cash out if you choose to, but you don't need to to gain equity in your home.
Yeah. Interesting, though, to see this shift. And this is something that is likely to continue at least through the rest of this year and on into next.
I don't see it changing.
Yeah, as you mentioned, this is something that we see the trends maybe a couple of years on down the line. So this may be a trend line we see for quite some time.
It could be.
Interesting stuff. Again, Brian Witta with Coldwell Banker Flag City Realtors with us this morning, kind of breaking down some of this data on real estate. That we see. We have a link to the report, by the way, on our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net if you want to read through that. It is fascinating reading. By the way, before we let you go real quickly, I want to mention, we'll have you put your Findlay Civic Band hat on for a second. The first of the Findlay Civic Band concerts is coming up this week.
It is Wednesday night at St. Michael Church on Bright Road at 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. We will be playing a cool family-friendly concert. Bring a lawn chair. Bring a chair. Come on out. You'll be there, Chris.
I will be there. It's going to be great weather.
Yeah.
It's going to be great weather.
We're looking forward to it. It's always fun. And we appreciate St. Mike's for hosting us.
Absolutely. Right there in the front portico. So drop on by. And then that previews the Riverside Summer Concert Series that begins the next week. So
correct.
We'll look forward to it happening on Wednesday, 7 p.m.
Right? 7 p.m. at St. Mike's on Bright Road.
Brian, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, in the week ahead, we are going to get a lot of data on the labor market. The monthly JOLTS report, the Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey, is released on Tuesday. The May Jobs Report comes out on Friday. And, of course, sandwiched in between are the weekly unemployment figures on Thursday. What are we expecting and what kind of reaction will we see? Bankrate Senior Economic Analyst Mark Hamrick is with us once again. How much are you holding your breath on this? Kind of give us a best case, worst case scenario here.
Well, I don't know what the worst case would be, but the best case is that we see the job market really, I think, holding steady or even doing better. And in the current environment, consumer sentiment has been pretty downbeat. Business sentiment could use a lift as well, because there's concern about the impacts of the tariffs, and we're still in a relatively high interest rate environment. Inflation is elevated but coming down. So what economists are really looking for here is that the unemployment rate will come in at about 4.2%, which would be unchanged from the previous couple of months, and that we'll have hiring not quite as robust as what we saw in April, when we had 177,000 jobs added. Consensus right now is a gain of about 130,000 jobs.
And I've seen and read a lot of stuff from analysts that predict that the kind of uncertainty and potential volatility that we've been seeing is not going to go away anytime soon. Is this the new normal, at least for the foreseeable future?
Well, I don't know that I'm the person to be trying to say what normal is anymore, but, you know, just
fair enough.
As we speak, we've seen so much back and forth just on the question of the tariffs, for example, right? And so one night a court says their so-called reciprocal tariffs are not legal. The next day, an appeals court basically overturns that, or at least undermines that ruling. And we know that this is going to be a primary tool that is relied upon by the administration through a number of different authorities. So I think that volatility and uncertainty are going to be with us, and those are things that are not conducive for hiring or business decisions.
Yeah, explain, kind of simplify this and break it down for those who are not real well-versed in all of this. How do all of these things tie together and relate to each other?
Well, I think Americans actually are pretty well dialed in on most of these things. The consumer sentiment and other surveys that are being done, and the survey that will soon release at Bankrate, indicate that Americans have a pretty good sense of what import taxes mean. And they have a sense that it risks that we won't see goods on store shelves to the degree that we would have in the past.
Right.
We had a sharp drop in container ships coming into the West Coast, and that has not rebounded to previous levels. And so, you know, if you're like me, Chris, you may have even had family members who credit us for thinking that we understand these things thoroughly. And, you know, I'll have somebody say something like, well, should I buy this or that right now? You know, and I'll say, well, you know, I think what people really need to prioritize in the current environment is their savings, because I don't know that many people who feel like they're saving too much money. I know
sure.
A good number of people who feel like they're saving some money, or are relatively confident with the savings they have. But if there is a risk that prices go up as we expect because of tariffs, then the risk and likelihood is that prices will be going up on many things.
Yeah.
And so savings is one way to protect against that.
Yeah. And that kind of leads into the other thing that I wanted, the point that I wanted to make and get your thoughts on, because the jobs numbers are certainly important. But the other metric that is equally important, certainly for workers, is wages. And wage growth has been slowing, with more retailers talking about having to raise prices, as you were saying, is an effect of trade issues. How much concern is building on that front?
Well, in terms of wages, I would say that wage growth has not been as sharp as it was before, but particularly for those who need it most, those who are lower wage workers, I think that we have continued to see some improvement. In April, the main measure of wage growth, average hourly earnings, was up 3.8% year over year. Now, that is just, you know, maybe about a percentage point and change above where the recent inflation gauges have been. And so that number also does not apply to each and every household or worker. Obviously, some are getting more substantial wage increases. Some may be getting virtually no wage increases. And we also know, for example, that there's a pretty substantial component of the workforce, which is the gig economy, where, you know, that's not where they sit down with an employer and learn what kind of cost of living increase they're going to get over the next year. That's
right.
Very literally contingent on just whatever, you know, however the gigs are shaping up, you know. So we lived in precarious times in many ways. And so the good news is that the U.S. economy has continued to essentially chug along. You know, we did have negative GDP in the first quarter, but that was largely because of distortions related to the huge number of imports that were brought in as companies sought to get ahead of the tariffs.
Right.
And the expectation is that in the current quarter, we'll actually see economic growth that is essentially consistent with the long-term trend.
And speaking of trade issues, one of the other data points that's on the way in the coming days, and I think this is also on Thursday, is the U.S. trade deficit. And again, those numbers will kind of impact the labor market in different ways. How long before we see the effects of all of this really impact labor?
Let me put it this way. You know, we know that the container ships, as I mentioned earlier, have been slowing coming to the United States because
right.
primarily of the China tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
And so one thing that is reportedly given the White House some considerable pause, at least for a few minutes, has been that the chief of staff had reported to the president that, listen, this is your base going to be affected when truck drivers and dock workers mm-hmm. are not getting the work that they had had before. So
yeah.
think about the fact that that affects retail, right? You know, in the next month or so is the time when the orders would typically be put in for the holiday shopping season. And so if that level of buying isn't going to occur, at least in the same way that it would have in the past, then whole swaths of the U.S. economy or workforce can be affected by that.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely something to watch. But of course, the thing that we sometimes are at risk of forgetting about with respect to trade is the reason why, and we tend to focus almost only on the goods deficit. We don't think about the fact that we are a tremendous exporter of services in the United States when the white collar workforce or the services workforce is the biggest part of the workforce. The healthcare sector alone is one fifth of the U.S. economy. My point about that being that it's the wealth of the United States where consumers have the ability and the resources to buy things that's sort of at the core of all of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if we were in an immensely poor company, I guess, you know, by some view, that would be a better situation because we wouldn't be running a massive trade gap, right? But nobody
yeah.
wants to be in that situation.
Right.
So we have to keep these things in perspective.
Yeah. Speaking of the White House, the president in the past week reportedly once again tried to put pressure on the Fed to cut interest rates. Their next meeting isn't for a couple more weeks yet, but they have seemed very hesitant to do that. What is your best guess on what happens there?
The Fed will not be cutting or moving interest rates with the announcement that's due June 18th because they're waiting. Essentially, they're in a wait and see mode. They want to see what the impacts of the tariffs will be. And it's particularly difficult because, as we mentioned before, some of this policy seems to change literally by the hour.
Yeah.
I think they will take some solace from the most recent reading on their preferred measure of inflation, which is coming down, but isn't yet at their 2% target.
Yeah. And real quickly, since we're talking about reports coming up this week, I noticed that the latest numbers on consumer credit are out on Friday. There is no chance that number goes down, right?
Well, I mean, that's why we don't like to prognosticate too much. Getting ahead of these numbers, particularly on those which are volatile. But let me put it this way. I think consumers are trying to balance between, you know, utilizing credit as a tool, but also purchasing the things they need. And in an environment where prices are elevated, in an environment where, you know, many people feel like they're struggling to buy necessities. It may well be that we see that, but here's the other part, and that is there are obviously different products and components of essentially the debt segment. And so revolving credit is one thing, which is credit cards. We saw a big ramp up in automobile purchases earlier in the year. I'm not quite clear on where we are with that, let's say in the last month,
mm-hmm.
but all those things, including home purchases, are part of that equation. And we know that home sales have been really in the quagmire here. Some of the recent months have
yeah.
been the lowest since 2009.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what these numbers tell us and how the market reacts moving forward. Again, Mark Hamrick is a Bankrate senior economic analyst with us this morning. Mark, as always, appreciate your insight and your analysis of all of this for us. Thanks very much.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Information that makes a difference. Good mornings with Chris Oaks on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Sometimes you don't have to go very far to find the broken news. This from Independence, Ohio, and a story that started out reasonable enough. If you're going to buy something, especially if you're going to buy something secondhand through one of those online marketplaces or from a buddy, a friend, or whatever, you want to try the product out first, right? That is not unreasonable. You want to see the product in action, make sure that it actually functions properly and all of that. So a man in Independence, Ohio, was at a hotel showing a gun to a prospective buyer who also happened to be his brother-in-law. And at some point during the transaction, presumably during a demonstration of the fact that it was working, the weapon accidentally fired and injured the seller in the leg. That's right. The seller shot himself in the leg at some point, demonstrating the quality of the merchandise. Well, I guess it works. He was taken to a hospital with non-life-threatening injuries and faces a number of charges related to the accidental shooting. Accidental discharge of a weapon, all of that. No word on whether the brother-in-law actually bought the gun after that. I don't know. But it did work. So, knew you weren't getting taken. More fun on a plane. British Airways cabin crew member was discovered dancing naked in a business class lavatory during a flight from San Francisco to Heathrow Airport in London. Usually, when we have these disruptive people on airplanes, they are passengers, right? Not very often does a member of the crew need to be restrained, but the 41-year-old crew member, who was supposed to be serving meals to passengers but had disappeared. After the plane was searched, he was found naked and dancing in the Club World Cabin Lavatory. This British Airways jet. Dancing naked in the lavatory. Man, how big are the lavatories on British Airlines jets? I mean, no. Any of the airplane lavatories that I've ever been in, you can barely turn around, much less get naked and have a dance-off. Anyway, staff reportedly dressed their colleague in spare first-class passenger pajamas and then buckled him into a first-class seat for the remainder of the 10.5-hour flight. When the plane finally landed, the crew member was taken to the hospital for evaluation before being arrested on suspicion of being unfit for duty. On suspicion of being unfit for duty. They're not sure, but they suspect he may have been unfit for duty. Yeah, okay. Let's see. Another story here out of merry old England. Joseph Harris Bertiel has become the youngest person ever accepted into Mensa as the High IQ Society. Joseph, you see, is just 2 years, 182 days old. He's not even 3 years old yet. He's already a member of Mensa. Joseph's parents, Dr. Rose and Dr. David Harris Bertiel, both are lecturers at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland, say their son displayed advanced development from a very early age. His mom tells the Guinness World Records people that Joseph rolled over at 5 weeks, spoke his first word at just 7 months, read his first book aloud at 21 months. By 2 years and 3 months old, he could read fluently He could count to 10 in 5 languages and count forwards and backwards over 100. He also knows the Greek alphabet and is learning Morse code and has recently shown an interest in the periodic table. This kid's going to be very popular in school in a few years. He's going to be the most popular kid in school, I'm sure. Rose describes Joseph as a very kind and loving child, confident and curious. He apparently does not yet realize that he is more advanced than his peers. But I have a feeling he's going to find out. And so are the other kids. They're going to find out. He's shown a recent interest in the periodic table. I wonder if he's shown a recent interest in self-defense classes. That's the first things. Joining Mensa is one thing. Joining a self-defense class is going to be the next thing you want to do with that. That is amazing, though. 2 years, 182 days old. He's smarter than I am. See, now, compare that to this 2-year-old boy in New Jersey who is safe after taking a ride on a luggage conveyor belt at Newark International Airport. So not exactly a member of Mensa. This toddler's mother was at the JetBlue counter at Newark International Airport, New Jersey, trying to rebook a flight that had been canceled when the boy stepped onto a conveyor belt that moves checked bags throughout the terminal and was suddenly whisked away behind the wall. Climbs onto the conveyor belt, and there he goes. Two Port Authority police officers jumped onto the belt and caught up with the child just as he was about to go through the luggage x-ray machine on the lower level. The boy was not injured, but EMS was called in as a precaution and probably had to revive his mom, I would think. She probably had a heart attack, but the boy was not injured. So, not the same kid that is now a member of Mensa. I think it's safe to say. I don't have the name, but I don't think it's the same kid. And finally, in the broken news this morning, in Los Angeles, a man is suing a cemetery after being told his mother's grave marker was placed at the wrong grave. The lawsuit alleges fraud, breach of contract, negligence, and negligent infliction of emotional distress at Forest Lawn Cemetery. The complaint claims that the plaintiff visited a grave marked with his mother's monument for 4 years. But only recently, Forest Lawn informed him that wasn't his mother's grave. The error was apparently discovered during another family's service last month. The monument has since been moved to the correct site, but he is suing anyway. Now, I am not one that advocates, you know, frivolous lawsuits and suing people at the drop of a hat and all of that. But this does seem like something that is a bit unreasonable. I mean, you really should expect to have your mother's grave headstone or monument at her gravesite. That's, I don't think that's an unreasonable expectation, you know? I think would be a little emotionally upsetting. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
When local news breaks, you can hear about it on social media at lightning speed. And while getting you the information fast is important, WFIN will always present the story only after verifying with actual sourced facts. This is WFIN News Director Matt Demchek. Trust the voice that's been covering the news in Findlay and Hancock County for more than 80 years. You can depend on us to get the story right every time. On social media, 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and at 95.5 FM.
And now, your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. This is what you want to hear first thing on a Monday morning as we head back to work after the weekend. CEO pay for the top companies in the S&P 500 is what they looked at here. CEO pay. has surged by almost 10% over the past year, with a median package now hitting $17.1 million. That's the median of what CEOs and S&P 500 companies make annually, $17.1 million. This increase is attributed to a strong stock market and rising corporate profits. Shareholders are pushing for performance-based pay, with a significant portion of compensation now coming in the form of stock awards tied to company achievements. At the top of the list, the highest compensation for a company CEO, the S&P 500, Rick Smith of Axon Enterprises, last year got a $164.5 million package. Wow. That's good money if you can make it. Good work if you can get it, as they say. Now, compare that. Again, a lot of that, though, is in stock options and not in cash. One of the richest men in the world, Warren Buffett, his compensation was just $405,000. So definitely on the lower end of the scale. And again, demonstrating that cash is not king for the big CEOs. Elon Musk received no pay in 2024, but has a multi-year stock package valued at $56 billion. The pay gap, this is the interesting number here. The pay gap between CEOs and employees remains a concern, according to this report. Workers, on average, now need 192 years to match CEO earnings at least half of the companies that were surveyed from the S&P 500. In at least half the cases, workers need at least 192 years to match the earnings of their CEO. Wow. Now, there's some data again. First thing on a Monday morning, maybe you don't want to hear that, but those are pretty jaw-dropping numbers. Well, June, as it turns out, is actually a really big month at the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts. I got the kickoff of the full schedule of summer events, along with the announcement of the upcoming main stage series here in the not-too-distant future. And Heather Clough is here to tell us what's happening. You know, that's it. You know, all of the big shows are done now. The main stage series is over, and the other series have concluded. So people might think, oh, not much going on, but now you go outside.
That's right. We go outside to food trucks and the park and Boogie.
Yeah.
And
so that is the next big thing. And this is coming up on Friday, Boogie on the Block. This is a huge event and has been for a number of years, an important event as well.
It is. It's very important to support what we do. It's probably our biggest fundraiser every year. Mm-hmm. And I know it's moved around. I think it was originally Boogie on Broadway and Boogie on Main, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we have that big parking lot.
Yeah.
And we put it there now, and it's a lot of fun. And it's Friday night. The gates open at 5 p.m. I almost said a.m. That would be a little early.
Although you probably could and still would draw a crowd, but not quite that ambitious. So, yeah, give us all of the details on this.
Yeah. So, like I said, the gates open at 5 p.m. We have two bands this year. Starting at 6, we have Amelia Earhart's. They're a band out of Toledo.
Okay.
They'll go from 6 to 7:30. And then at 8, Doc Robinson, which is a Columbus band, will start. They go from 8 to 10, and then the gates close at 10. This year, we have all the food trucks again, the beer tent, of course, and we have a play space this year. So I know in the past we've done that, mm-hmm. and we're bringing it back.
Yeah. So especially in the earlier part of the event, it's a lot more family friendly. And then once you get down closer to sunset, it becomes a more of an adult's party.
At bedtime.
Yeah. So you're planning on coming with the kids probably earlier rather than later.
And both bands are great, so you can't go wrong with either.
It's going to be a terrific thing. And then after that, you roll into, as we said, it kind of kicks off the summer schedule. We've got the Riverside Summer Concert Series right around
the corner. Yes, we do. So June 11th, that starts. And those are every Wednesday from June 11th through July 16th. And this year they're supported by Provisions Living, so we want to thank them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just have two regional bands. We have had the Finley Civic Concert Band, the Fostoria Community Band. We're doing a Polish-American concert band this year, which I think is really fun.
That'll be fun.
And some pipes and drums. So we're you know, we're expanding. We get phone calls all the time from regional bands, you know, community bands that want to play. So it's kind of exciting that we're getting that draw.
And again, those are Wednesdays beginning at 7 p.m.
Right.
Free in the park. At the band shell, which has been renovated and expanded, the band shell, over the winter. So it's really fabulous.
It looks great. Yeah, yeah, it's a wider stage.
Yeah, it's going to be terrific. So that begins on June 11th. Certainly circle the calendar for that. And then the Lunchtime Live series also begins. That not until July 1st, but since it's the 1st of July, I want to mention it because that is another Concert in the Park series.
It is. It's at the Waterfall Pavilion, so the slightly smaller space. And that's mostly, you know, like solo artists, duos, trios, all local, regional.
Kind of acoustic kind of flavor too.
Yes. So I almost describe it a little bit like a Live at Arms light outside. You come, it's 11 to 1. You come and just enjoy lunch. We're going to have a food truck there every week this time.
Okay.
That's something new. But just come, bring your own lunch, relax. You know, sometimes we get some groups of kids. Sometimes we get some groups of seniors. It's a lot of fun. It's just a great way to spend a lunchtime in the summer.
And that begins July 1st, and it is every
Tuesday. Yep, through August 19th.
Okay, through August 19th. So circle that on your calendar as well. Lots of outdoor events going on throughout the summer. And then, as you mentioned, food trucks and
food trucks on Wednesday, so it's the first Wednesday of the month. You can come out and, you know, if it's really hot, come on in and eat your tacos, or you can enjoy it outside or take it to go. And
and
we have the farmers markets too on Thursdays.
Farmers markets on Thursday, hosting those at the Marathon Center as well. So the other big event that is coming up, and this is next week, is the unveiling of the Main Stage series for the coming year. You have already announced the Live at Arms and
Wildcard and family shows.
Yeah, so all of those have been announced. So these are the Main Stage shows.
These are the big ones, yeah.
The big ones.
And it's our 10th anniversary, so it's pretty exciting.
Now, I think it's important, as we were talking about with Boogie, this is the big fundraiser. And I think a lot of times people will think, you know, the Main Stage series are the big shows, and the big pricey shows sometimes. But those are not, that's not where you make your money. That is really the definition of arts for art's sake.
Exactly. Yeah. I think we've talked about the program model we changed a while back and doing fewer shows, but bigger names. And if we break even on those shows, I consider us lucky.
Yeah.
But it gets people there. It's what people want to see, and they come back to other shows.
So I just wanted to point that out as we're talking about these, and we reference Boogie being this weekend. That's the reason why those events like Boogie are so very important for really the work that you do.
Absolutely. So Boogie and the Dueling Pianos, you know, we are a nonprofit. And those big shows are an investment in our community.
Absolutely. With everything that you do for the school kids and youth theater and all of that.
All of our education and outreach.
Yeah. But the Main Stage series is what gets everybody excited. I know that you can't. This, by the way, is on Tuesday the 10th. Next Tuesday.
Tuesday the 10th. Yep. Okay. The doors open at 5:30. We'll have some free food, cash bar. Jason Wagner is performing.
Okay.
And then the announcement event will start at 6:15. MCPA is getting a national award, so that'll be awarded there.
Very cool.
From Ovation TV. Yeah, it's
very
one of 10 in the country, so it's kind of exciting.
Very nice and well-deserved. So I know that you can't necessarily let the cat out of the bag in all of these, but what can we expect? Can you give us a hint of what we are going to be enjoying for the Main Stage series
Absolutely.
Next year?
I can definitely do that.
Okay.
So one thing I want to start by saying is there is a formula around how we book this series, and it's usually two touring Broadway shows, two concerts, one I'd call a fan favorite or a legend, and then something more contemporary or more critic's choice, and a holiday show.
Okay.
So you can expect that.
Okay.
And I actually wrote us a riddle to say if you can get it.
All right.
So you have to guess five shows from this one riddle.
Okay.
So here we go. From college dorms and river bends to theme park rides and online trends, with juice and change, you have no reason to miss what's on main stage this season.
Hmm. Okay, there's. I think there were a lot of hints dropped in there. I'm going to have to think about this. I'm going to have to think about this. Well, we'll find out
On June 10th. Tuesday.
Yeah, next Tuesday.
I'll have to explain the riddle at the season announcement.
I was
going to
say, if it's not obvious, you'll have to explain that. By the way, there is one show on the main stage coming up later this month. This is a rental show. And when we talk about the main stage shows not being money makers, the rental shows are.
They are. Those are 100% profit to us.
Yeah.
I mean, not 100%, but you know, there's no risk. There's no risk to us. And we have a tribute to Taylor Swift and Bruno Mars coming. Okay. I want to focus that it is a tribute.
It's not the Bruno Mars. That would be quite a coup. I don't think the riddle refers to those particular artists.
No.
But it should be a lot of fun. That is June 28th, and tickets are on sale now.
Tickets are on sale now.
And by the way, with the there are quite a few rental shows.
We have some all summer, like once a month all summer.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there are some of those that will be happening in the fall and as we head toward the holiday season and all that. Those won't be announced during the main stage.
They will not. That will just be the shows that we're producing as part of our main stage series.
Okay, so there are probably additional shows that are coming. I'm sure some of them
have there booked. Are. And actually, we are starting a new thing, a branded series, not a series, but called AMP. So the popular shows that, like, we did the country shows, those will be announced on a running basis.
Okay, very good. So we'll wait for that as well. Big announcement next Tuesday. Again, we've got a link on our webpage for all the details on everything we're talking about. Man, it's a busy June.
It is.
Heather Clough with us from the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts. Thanks very much for dropping by.
Thank you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, which is goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, keeping kids safe this summer, we have details on this year's bicycle rodeo from the Findlay Police Department. Till tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.